Yes.
Come in.
I'm looking for Jack Jones, Chief Information Officer.
Come on in. Have a seat.
I'm Bob Twitt of the Acme Data Collection Agency. Here's my card.
The what?
The Acme Data Debt Collection Agency says here your company has accumulated an enormous amount of data debt, and none of it has been repaid.
Debt, you say? You need to talk with the chief financial officer. That's Sam Smith, and his office is down at the other end of the hall.
No. I need to talk to you.
About what kind of debt?
Data debt.
What do you mean data debt? Never heard of that.
Well, remember when you told a development group to create their own customer database because there wasn't time to integrate the new data into the company master file?
Sure, I remember. We got that system delivered right on time and everybody loved it. We even won an award for it.
That's great. But then what?
What do you mean, and then what?
And then what happened to other teams who tried to use that data or to that development team that had to maintain that data?
They moved on to other projects.
And how are those other projects going?
Well, we've experienced some headwinds getting a few enhancements delivered. Something about inconsistencies in the data, but we have our best people working on it, and I'm confident that it'll be resolved. Yes?
Mr. Jones, Ms. Williams needs to speak with you about a problem with some reports she's been getting. Something about bad customer data. She's preparing her board presentation and says it's urgent.
Thank you. Tell her I'll see her in a moment.
More data debt. That one's new. Need to make a note.
Right.
Absolutely. Your IT area has ignored too many data problems and left too many things undone, claiming, we'll fix that later. You told your teams we don't have time to do it right. Every time you did that, you accumulated data debt. And how many times did you actually fix that later?
Well, I'm sure that there were
instances. Not. And not only did you create the data debt for your own development teams, you created data debt for everybody that tries to use that data. Did you know that every project has to start with 3 weeks of research to figure out what the heck the data means? Reconcile the data between the multiple sources you created before they can actually do anything that generates business value. Your best people are working on this, you say. Seems they could be doing something more productive than trying to understand your shortcuts. That's lost opportunity cost on top of the wasted time. You owe us big time, mister.
Look, I'll talk with my team and I'll find out how
there's nothing. There's nothing to find out. The buck stopped with you. All right. And there's a whole lot of buck. You've cost your company tens of millions. And every day that number goes up. I'm here to collect.
Collect? Collect what?
Collect your data debt. We are a data debt collection agency. It's on my card. Look at it. After all, so before I came here, I put all holds on your bank accounts and credit cards, and I put a lien on your house. And
you can't do that.
It's already done. Data debt is costing companies untold billions of dollars every year. I'm just one person doing what I can do to see that it gets repaid, or better yet, to get companies to prevent going into data debt in the first place.
But you... Oh, thank goodness. What an awful dream. Well, let's see what Podvalet found for me this morning.
You know, I talk with CEOs and CIOs all the time, and a recurring theme is frustration and not knowing how to measure and communicate all of the work required to let people get to the data they need.
Maybe I should listen to this.
Yeah, maybe you should. This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
I talk with CEOs and CIOs all the time, and a recurring theme is frustration and not knowing how to measure and communicate all of the work required to let people get to the data they need.
Then they should listen to our podcast today, because that's exactly what we're going to be talking about.
My grandfather told me, never go into debt. And I listened to that for a few minutes. Then I saw that new turntable in the audio magazine. And then the store had that easy credit card. And bang, I have my brand new turntable. But the magic wore off. The payments were due. And I'm still a college student with no money. Insult to injury, a few months later, the new model comes out and I'm stuck with the old one. Well, we all grow up, we take a look at ourselves and realize that debt is a good tool if we use it wisely. Now, this is a podcast about data. How does this apply? Debt applies to data, too. Suppose a manager needs some data and they need it now. The architect says it will take 3 months. The manager's spreadsheet jockey says it'll take 3 days. You choose the 3 days, right? It's not the same solution, but oh, we don't care about that. Anyway, maybe it worked out, maybe it didn't. Most of the time it doesn't. And like the turntable, it loses its shine and you still have to make the payments. A lot of data efforts are not AI and analytics. They're like this stuff where I just need to report. There's no big brass ring to grab. So how do we justify these projects? How do we measure and manage those? Because the data stuff doesn't work. The vendors, the consultants, all we see is all hat and no cattle as business leaders. And that's a fair opinion. But we still need our data. We can't keep doing the spreadsheets. So data debt is a great message to use. It's also a great measurement to use. Those are the two contexts. As a message, it's a metaphor. We can communicate IT and business. As a measurement, we can go, hey, our data debt's too high. We want it to be this much money. Should we fund project A or project B because of the debt? These are all cool things. A conversation like this is a business conversation. It resonates with anyone who's trying to think differently about data. That's what our pod's about. Think different. Get some stuff done for a change. If you talk about data debt in the right context, it becomes a slam dunk motivator to get serious about data management and data governance because they become business discussions, not tech discussions. And that's why people lean in with this conversation. They hear a message using words they understand, and they see a measurement, have a little training, they can use their decisions to manage data. Try it. Pay now, pay later. I'm delighted to introduce our guest today, Barbara Forth. Barbara specializes in building datability of organizations to improve data quality and generate new insights for organizational decision-making and excellence. And that's the official stuff. She's currently a chief data officer at a big honking university in the east of the United States. Her approach is to understand goals and targets, align strategies, build readiness, and do all that cool data management stuff that we're supposed to do in this endeavor that we call data. She has really extensive experience and has had numerous executive and consulting roles at major institutions. Barbara, welcome to Rock Bottom.
Hi, good morning, John. So glad to be here.
We are glad you're here too. And it's disclosure, Barbara and I have known each other for a good bit of time because we worked together about, 1,000 years ago, something like that. Yeah.
Yep, 1,000 years ago on the opposite coast.
Yeah. So yeah. When everything loose flowed to the west. But let's start where we are now, because we are going to get to that really exciting, wonderful, uplifting work we did many years ago in this conversation. But our topic today is a challenge to organizations, and we're calling that data debt. And we're going to get to your view on that because. Listener, there is a reason Barbara is on the data debt pod. Okay, so just hang in there. You are in an academic setting. You're in a university, which in my experience are really unique. People say this culture is hard. This culture's here hard. I've worked in 3 or 4 universities over the years, and I don't think I've ever seen some more frustrating things in my career. What are, again, in the context of data and as a business leader and an executive, because that's our audience here, what are your challenges right now in academia and data stuff?
Well, it's interesting. I actually hail from financial services. So I started General Electric, worked with Fidelity, all sorts of investment houses. And so my training was very formal, came through mainframe, all the different architectures over the years. I think the difference really comes down to culture. And you and I have talked about culture a lot. And it was hard to understand how different cultures are until I got to the university. And I've been there about 3 years. And the boss that hired me, Bernie, said, you know, Barbara, it's going to take you a year to even understand the calendars. It's going to take you a long time to even understand how the different organizations work. And it occurred to me that a university is more like a Ferris wheel, where you've got the separate cars all moving. All the organizations are on different calendars, whether you're bringing students in through admissions on an 18-month cycle, or the kids start in September and then the finals and add drop and the various time frames. So the offices actually go dark during certain time periods. And that's a very different idea. The organization itself is not top down. I think the thing I've learned about culture, especially through some ideas around appreciative inquiry and doing large scale organizational change, is that you really have to focus on what your superpowers are. And with a positive aspect, the superpower of a university is everybody loves the university. They want to do what is in the best interest of the university. And so there's this natural joining that happens. There's also a real difficulty in making decisions because you want to have academic freedom and the idea of research and learning within an organization. So that's not a natural super skill of the organization, but they are willing to gather. And so what I've found is how do we figure out what are the real skills and aspect of an organization and use those and put light process into place to compensate for the other pieces. We have some governance, right? It's light. I think about it at times that it's more like I am a circus barker in a very large tent that I can invite lots of people in and be very creative about solving challenges, but I don't have a large budget to build out a governance. Our strategy is build by doing 1% better. And over time, you can see that happening. It's about vision and it's about bringing people along, but it's about learning and the experiential nature of why data matters. And until somebody's gone through the cycle, they really don't know why am I even doing this? And it's encouraging that over time.
Is there an issue with people getting data, intricate aspects of data is an abstract intrusion to them, and they really don't understand that at some point there's a transformation that you have to grasp more about data, that the light bulb hasn't gone on for the importance here of
I think
data?
academia is actually very different. And why I say that is I think across the different organizations, depending on the schooling that you go through, if you go through the MBA school versus the School of Education, you end up with a very different world view. I'd have to say from a research and analytics, there's tremendous skills, but we're missing micro skills. And the micro skills that are missing vary across the whole organization. What are the different combinations of those micro skills that are necessary? Again, it's taking the amazing skills people have and just adding that little salt and pepper so that there is that better understanding of data analytics.
The
That's really,
context.
that's the essence of what people want. All the nonsense of the data management and all the things that we've been talking about for 30 years work together almost like a ladder to culminate and make that happen. But that activity itself has no value. And that's the piece that people don't understand.
Don't sell that you have to do a catalog-y thing or a metadata-y thing, or there's some technology or it's quote unquote in the cloud and everything. That's just background noise. The important stuff is what you just said about, can you get this to people that they understand it in context? Our pod today is about data debt. And that means we have to go back in time. You and I were working at a mega corp type place, right? I mean, it was big. It's a big organization. And we were trying to get their attention. And you and I were sitting in your office one day. You asked me a question. Do you remember what that question was that pushed this snowball down the hill?
I don't remember.
You asked me, we were talking about technical debt. And you asked me, is there such a thing as data debt? And I went, well, there is. And we've been kicking it around, but we've never had to opportunity to dive into it. But in that organization, we were having trouble getting people's attention, right? I mean, you were banging your head against the wall every single day to try to get someone to say, look, you're paying all this money for all this work. Why aren't you paying attention to it? So we started to talk about, well, maybe data debt was a way to get their attention. Since then, I've used it a lot in practice. You've talked to me about it a couple of times since then, and it convinced me that I really had to get off my butt and do some research and actually write about it, which we've done. Did you get a chance to use it there at all? I know we tried. I think we talked about it. So tell me about your data debt involvement and how you've applied it and things like that.
Well, I think that organization had a very strong desire to drive information from an architecture perspective.
Yeah.
So they were very innovative and early in terms of business architecture, and they had a pretty good activity model that identified the different aspects of the front office, back office, et cetera. And I think the piece about data debt, at the time, Gartner was writing a lot about technology debt, and they talked about two different types, one of which was intentional. And I do have this conversation often about intentional debt.
Yeah.
You're never going to get everything done. You're never going to.
Correct.
If you don't do your requirements up front, then you don't know what you're going to hit. Even when you do your requirements up front, life is changing at a very fast pace. Mm-hmm. And therefore, that's inevitable that if it's time and quality and money, one of those is going to get changed. And so the question is, that's intentional debt. I'm making a conscious choice. But there's a difference when I have a roadmap and I know where I'm going versus everything is haphazard. So in an organization that's like at a level zero or a level one, it's difficult to push out technical debt because you don't have a map, right? Yeah. So a lot of this is about language and a map and a flashlight and to know where we are and where we're going.
Yeah,
that's great. A great example in that particular organization that I did use was there was a field that was the same field across multiple systems that interrelated with each other. And the particular field, I think it was a fun code or something.
Yeah.
It was 2 characters, 3 characters, and 5 characters. And the idea was, okay, so we're not going to change everything. But next time you open up that patient, next time that system gets changed, you're going to expand it to 5 and you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
By having that roadmap and identifying what, and it's not everything, and that's part of what we're doing at the university I'm at now, we're going to manage the core. What's the most important stuff to get right? And to get right not only in your primary ERP and your transaction systems, but across the organization so that you can roll up information in a consistent way. So if I see a number, I can find it in context and I can trust it. And so using data debt is and tracking it is more about getting people to understand the value of why of what it is, why we protect it, what the pieces need to be, and the characteristics. And that we can, you know, this all this work is a team sport, right? And you can't have just the marketing department do it or just the financial services as information flows across the organization. So it really, again, is about shared language and shared agreement of what the outcome is going to be and some form of a flashlight and a roadmap of that everybody's going in the same direction. And any of this stuff with data debt is really around, do people all align on all of those and understand why over time we need to do it? So data debt helps give a very simple example as to why we need to align together.
I knew, listener, that Barbara would be a terrific guest, but because we have time, I have to now ask you the same 2 questions we ask every single guest. And I'm going to start with question number 1, which is, who is a leader, historical figure, alive or dead? You don't even have to name names, that you admire and why? And how can we apply what you've learned from that to our data work?
Well, you and I talked about this a little bit earlier. So I relocated a couple of years ago to Virginia.
Yeah.
And it turns out that my family is actually from this area. and came over on some of their first ships to the United States. And my older brother is a historian. And so there's a story that he talked about last Christmas. And I would really like to meet my great great, I don't know, 13 great grandmother. I don't
13
exactly know
greats,
which
yes.
one.
Okay, yeah.
Who had something like eight sons. And in the Civil War, half fought for the North and half fought for the South.
Whoa,
And
Thanksgiving
then
dinner
at
was
the
interesting.
end, they all came back and worked on the farm.
Wow.
And I think, given what's going on today and the divisiveness and the just the learning on how do you do that,
Yeah.
and what was that time really like, and I think in terms of tolerance and alignment and bringing different people back together, that's a lot of what we're trying to do with all this organizational change.
Next question. If you could get one thing implemented, it's kind of like you're given magical powers and you can change something in your organization.
Well, I actually think it's doable, and I think we're working toward it. One of the ideas has been over the last 15 plus years, I take all the data and I drag it to me and I interrogate it all on my own and I get my answer. And I'd like to see the discipline and the tooling and technologies is making it more and more available. But the idea of aligning and working together on integrated platforms for analytics so that we are collectively creating the gold copy of analytic data across the university.
Barbara, thank you. You'll be back in a moment for our exciting game show.
And thanks to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros. If you're buried under a ton of data debt and want it forgiven, call on Hubris. Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. We all know what data debt looks like. We even recognize it when it's happening, and we know the right thing to do. But too often, the focus is on doing something now rather than on doing something right. Then we console ourselves with the promise that we'll fix it later, and how often does that happen? It seems odd that we make the decision to accept the consequences of accruing data debt without even considering or quantifying that future effort. In June 2024, HFS Research, in partnership with Cinity, published a white paper entitled "Don't Drown in Data Debt: Champion Your Data-First Culture." You can find a link to it with this episode. They surveyed more than 300 leaders and found out that fewer than 40% quantify the impact of bad data on their operations. In other words, data debt is invisible in most companies. One chief digital and technology officer lamented that the company had been so focused on growth that they didn't really pay the right level of attention to the data architecture and to the data framework to be in a more competitive position for the future. Sound familiar? So if data debt is seemingly universal, and we can see it happening at the time, and we know what needs to be done, why does the problem so stubbornly persist? Because there's a disconnect between those that accrue data debt and those that have to repay it. Avoiding data debt requires incremental investment on the front end for the benefit of those that consume the data on the back end, and I'm not going to risk my delivery date for something that's not going to benefit me. So between now and next time, the one thing you can do is to start to recognize when you're accumulating data debt. You don't need to do anything fancy, just write it down in a Word file somewhere and bonus points for quantifying it. Do this one thing and you'll leapfrog over the other 60%. And if you're honest with yourself, you'll discover that the cost in terms of time and effort to avoid going into data debt is far less than the cost to get out of it. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
We're back with Barbara Forth, our guest this week on the pod about data debt. Welcome back, Barbara. We are going to play our fabulous game show we call the Audio Rorschach test. So instead of looking at an ink blot, you listen to a bit of music and give us your first impressions. Of course, the context of those impressions should come around to what we're talking about today, but whatever. Are you ready to play the fabulous show?
I am ready.
Oh, right. And just a reminder, there are no prizes whatsoever. because we have no budget whatsoever. Okay. Pick a record player number one, record player number two, record player number three, record player number four. Pick one.
My last name is Fourth, so let's go with four.
Let us go forth with four. All righty. First impressions. Anything in your recent work or that would have been a nice little tag on a meeting or something like that?
Yeah, I would say that was when my co-chair successfully sent out the new charge, which is a formal letter to all of the members of the Data Governance Council, the data working team, and the data analytics team, and all of the data advocates across the university with the new active pivot for how governance is going to happen at the university going forward.
Thank you, Barbara. It's a total pleasure. And since you are a chief data officer, could you please just make a mental note that in season two, we're going to be focusing a series of episodes on leadership, and think about coming back and saying CDO things to us, okay?
That'd be great. Thanks so much, John.
All right. Take care. And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
It's clear that data debt is a nightmare, both figuratively and literally. And I know I don't want Bob Twitter or anyone from the Data Debt Collection Agency visiting. As Barbara said, keep building, keep doing, follow the roadmap, 1% better. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about data debt, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2024, all rights reserved.